Okay. We'll start. So we're in the middle of a section of the instructions for how to prepare for a meditation session. And there are six preparations, Jorcha Druk. And we finished the first of the preparations, which was cleaning up your room and setting up your altar. And now we're on setting forth offerings on the altar, which are obtained honestly and which are beautiful. Okay? And they're beautiful in two ways. They are pretty themselves, and they are set, the, like in a restaurant, right? They say the food is good and the presentation was good. Okay? So it should be like that. I learned that in Basel, Switzerland. We used to go for diamond shows, and you pay $100 and you get this huge white plate and two pieces of asparagus. And that was supposed to be a good presentation. Okay. Lord Atisha, who was an Indian who came to Tibet and helped start the lineage of the Dalai Lama there 1,000 years ago, he said, in Tibet, the water is so wonderful. Perhaps we could just offer water on the altar and it would be enough. Excuse me, I'm going to sneeze. Okay. And then he said, your water is yenlakge. Yenlakge means that your water has the 8 fine qualities. Okay? Your Tibetan water has the 8 fine qualities. So, of course, our author wants to tell us what the 8 fine qualities are. Here we go. Yenlakge ni chimzule. Say chimzu. Chimzu. This is probably the greatest commentary ever written on the Abhidharma Kosha. If you want to study Abhidharma, you should read Chimzu. No one's ever tried to translate it. It's incredible. It's huge. And it's beautiful. And it's very ancient. It's 13th century. And it was written by a person named Chim Jampayang. He was from an area called Chim. So Chim is like Kansas. And Zu means kosha. So Chimzu is the Abhidharma Kosha commentary by the Chim Jampayang. Okay? Very, very beautiful commentary. Very amazing. Okay? If you want to study Abhidharma, you should study that. It would take about... Rinpoche taught it to me for 10 years. Okay? Chimzu ne. Sil dan shim dan yangwa dan jam dan dang dan tinga me tung na din dan towala me ne. Oops. Okay, here we go. I don't know how we're going to get the 8. We'll see, okay? Sil means it should be cool. The water should be cool. Shim means it should be delicious. Yangwa means it should be light, not full of minerals. Jam means it should be soft. Dung means it should be clear. Tinga me means it should have no extra odor. Tungna dindan tawala minna. If you drink it, it should not hurt your throat or your tummy. And I think we have to count throat and tummy as two separate ones, because that's the 8. Does that work out? Does it work out? Okay. Yeah, okay. So those are the 8. It's very, very famous in Buddhist scripture. Good water should have the 8 qualities. Genden chu she, sungbatar chu sirwa pulwe. Then each of the 8 qualities, if you find water which has each of the 8 qualities, and if you consciously or with great awareness, you choose water which is of the highest quality, then that awareness creates different karmic seeds in your mind. Okay? So if you are consciously trying to find water which has these 8 qualities, in that case only, each of the qualities will give you a different karmic result. Okay? Which is kind of cute. All right? And people say that the Lam Rim texts get to anal on that, that, oh, they say every little thing has a karmic result. And people get irritated for some reason at the Lam Rim. But I think it's beautiful. I think it's fun. You know, each one of the 8 qualities is going to give you a different karma. Okay, so here we go. What are they? These can go in our list of correlations later, right? Chu silwa pulwet sutrim dakpadam. If you consciously make sure that the water is cool, then it will create a karma which makes it easier to keep your morality. Okay. Chu shimba pulwe seki ro chok ni. Se ro chok ni. Ro chok ni. So the Buddha has 112 qualities. There are 32 major qualities. There are 80 minor qualities. An enlightened being has 32 physical qualities. And when they describe an enlightened being, they say rochok, rochok nang, which means they have the quality of rochok. Ro means taste, the taste of food. Chok means supreme. Okay, rochok nang means it's very beautiful. As your karma gets more pure, everything starts to taste good to you. Okay? Even eggplant. Okay? Okay? So, and you'll find that, I believe, as your morality gets better, as your practice gets better, then you just enjoy everything better, you know? I like to say, people ask me, are you tight with the Dalai Lama? I say, oh yeah, we're tight, you know? And then they say, like how? And I say, well, I went to dinner with him not too long ago. That was 1996 or something. And it was in Washington, D.C., and there was a fundraiser for Tibet stuff. I don't remember what it was. And then Harrison Ford got up to introduce the Dalai Lama, and I was with Rinpoche. I jammed him in the ribs. I said, do you know who that is? And he says, that's some senator. I said, no, no, no. Guess again. He goes, ah, Indiana Jones, you know. And then we had dinner together with His Holiness and about 500 other people in a huge football stadium thing. And of course, everybody was looking at his table to see. Probably he'll take one pea and go like this, and he won't want anything else, you know. And we're all watching him. And they bring the food out, you know. And then he's like, and he was obviously really enjoying it. He had seconds. He didn't care that 500 people were staring at him. And that's called rochok nang. Rochok nang means it's a quality of an enlightened being. Everything you eat tastes like Julia Child, you know. Everything tastes wonderful, okay. Because your karma is getting purer, okay. So if you offer water which is delicious to the taste, then you will, that will create the karma to have that quality. Chu yangwa pulwe lusam leso rungwa. Chu yangwa means if the water is light and not too heavy, laden down with minerals or something like that. Okay, if the water is light, you will have leso rungwa. You guys know the short form of that, which is lerung. Lerung has come to mean a tantric retreat. But the original word le surungwa means fit for action, fit for work. Le means work. Rungwa means fit. Le surungwa means like if you go to Jenny's class and you've been doing your yoga every day for 6 months, like pretty hard yoga every day for 6 months, you are le rung for her class. You see, you are, what do you call it? You're in shape. You're in shape. So if you offer water which is light, then your body and your mind will be in shape. You have the karma to have a mind which is sharp and clear and devoted, and you have a body which is light and flexible and quick. You see, like that. Chu jamba pulwe, shegyu jamba. By offering soft water, I don't quite know the difference between light water and soft water, but maybe somebody could figure it out. Soft water, if you offer that, then you become a gentle person. The karma is that you become, and we're saying it has to be conscious, right? You have to think, I'm offering soft water so that I could be a more gentle person, and karmically you will become more gentle, okay? So even just the act of pouring water into those bowls, if it's conscious and aware, could be a great karmic exercise. Okay. Chud dangwa pulwe rikpa dangwa gyerwa. The word dang in Tibetan, those of you who are studying Tibetan, D-V-A-N-G-S, okay, dvangs, it means water which is crystalline. It has a quality of crystalline color, and you know, you can see through it, like in Hawaii. I used to go surfing in Hawaii, and it's scary because the waves are very big, and the water is dangwa, and you can't see the water. When you're coming down a wave, all you see is the reef. It's like 6 or 10 feet underwater. He lived there. And all you can see is this big reef staring at you, and you can't see the water, and it's very scary. So anyway, that's dangwa. But dangwa also refers to a state of mind which is clear and bright and happy. Okay? So by offering dangwa water, your mind will become dangwa. Okay? Dangwa gyur. Chuchi mepa pulwe dipa jongwa dang. If you're careful that the water doesn't have any odor to it, okay? And like if you've lived in India, oftentimes the water has some odor to it, you know? People are very careless. The industries are very careless about throwing mercury and, you know, anything in the water. And then cow poop and lots of human poop in the water. And there's an aftertaste and an after smell to it, okay? So if you're careful not to have that kind of water, then you will find it easy to overcome spiritual obstacles like laziness or jealousy of the other students or anger at your teacher when they demand too much or don't demand enough. Okay, like that. You will find it easy to get over those obstacles. Dipajongwa, chutolami nipa pulwa le. If you're careful to offer water which doesn't hurt your tummy, he's out of order, okay? Did you notice? Now he's doing 8 and then he's going to do 7, okay? But that's okay. He wrote the book. If you offer water which doesn't hurt your tummy, then you will be free of illness. Karmically, you'll be more likely to be free of illness, okay? Again, it has to be conscious and aware. As you offer it, you have to think about it, okay? And then finally, chudimbalami nipa pulwe nak nyamba che. If you offer water which doesn't harm your throat, then what do you think it would be? Yeah, your speech becomes more sweet. You're able to speak more meaningfully and more sweetly. Okay? Ngak nyambak cheki, penyin ge jumar sung. His lama, Kyabje Pabonka Rinpoche's lama, told him, those are the 8 correlations for the 8 qualities of good water. And as I said the other day, I enjoy going to, you know, Safeway or Bosch's and looking through all the waters. And I like that Italian one in the glass bottle. I feel like plastic bottles, they add a smell to the water, I think. So I buy nice water. It's hard for me. I don't have that much money. And but I invest, you know, I buy some nice water. And then I like to offer it. I think it's cool. Okay. Jay Drup Kamba Gele Gyatso Deni Tokmar Seretser Deni Tokmar Seretser Jay Drup Kanga Pepto Kapsu Che Dan Yok Che Tembe Yun Chap Bulwe Ting Sam Yang Mepar. So there was a lama named Drup Kamba Gele Gyatso. Okay. Gele Gyatso is a personal name, monk's name. Drup Kangba is probably, Drup Kang means a yogi's residence. So probably he lived in a special house in the monastery. So he was called Yogi Residence Gele Gyatso, something like that. Okay. He lived from 1641 to 1713, if you care, and nobody does. But I like to look these things up. Deni Tokmar, in the beginning, Seretser, he lived up on the top of Sera Monastery, towards the top of Sera Monastery. Sera was nestled into a mountain, okay? And there was a lower part of Sera and there was an upper part of Sera. Sera Me, which is our monastery, which is the best one, that Me means lower. It was physically lower, but of course spiritually superior to Sera J. Okay. Sir, Jay Dubkang Tu. Now the word Dubkang, meaning yogi's residence, he's using the word Jay before it, which would mean where it implies that perhaps it's where Jetsun Kapa practiced at Sera. Jetsun Kapa was around when Sera was founded. One of his students founded it during his lifetime, and he taught there when it was two buildings, or you know, a shed. Okay, Dubkang Du Pepchel Kapsu. When that lama first got to Sera, Kuche Dan Yoche Tembe, he didn't have much in the way of personal belongings or furniture in his house or things like that. He didn't have anything. He didn't have one little bowl to offer the water. He was that poor. Okay. Mepar yuncha bulkap kongrangi sheche chu yapo chune. So when he was gonna do a meditation, and before that he had to make offerings, he would clean out his porpa. Say porpa. Every monk has a porpa. A porpa is a little wooden bowl about this big. And you have to carry it around with you. Then, like the way they serve breakfast at Sera Me is you got to show up at like 5 o'clock. You have to do prayers with 3,000 other monks or 1,300 other monks. And then everybody pulls out their porpa. And the little kids in the monastery run around with teapots and they pour tea in it. And then they run around with sampa flour and throw it in the bowl. And they're required to run. It's considered respectful if they run to the temple. And one of them always slips and pours hot tea over, butter tea over some monk. So he would wipe out his porpa carefully, and then he would offer the water in his porpa. Okay, because he didn't have anything else. He was poor. Puwe yuncha puwe nung. Sulche shekab koincho rimboche la yarpo shute longche. And then when it was meal time, he would go to the altar and request Lord Buddha if he could borrow the water bowl to eat his breakfast in. See, I mean, he only had one bowl. Okay. Yang trune yuncha buwa sok. And then he would finish his Cheerios, and he would clean the bowl again and then fill it with water again and put it back on the altar. But in his mind, he was borrowing it back, okay? Shen yang yarki kap meto jun shing lek patan debu dan chu dan shing silwa sok chup ngop kana du le tang te pul chok te yang chup e jin sung dun ne chingi lap shing pul ne tar gewa ngowa sok chawa ti dabit se pelki nam tar yin. Shen yang yarki kap, if it's summer, meto junshin lepadan, you could just go out and pick wildflowers, okay? Or junshin lepa means plants which have a pleasing green stem on them, even if it's not a flower, okay? Dang. Debu dung, or you can pick berries or something that are growing in the wild. Chu dung, you can find water which is clear and cool. So, chipping opokana dukpa le dung de. Even if you can't find those things, you can imagine them and you can offer that. Okay? And I prefer that. I like that. I have a garden. I have 9 rose plants. I have like, I don't know, 30 kinds of flowers. I just grow flowers right now because I want to offer them on the altar. I want to have the flowers there to offer, you know. And it's wonderful. You find flowers that bloom at different times of the year, and then you have a supply. So I encourage you. It's also healthy to go outside away from your computer and your cell phone, like leave them in the house and go outside and dig around in the dirt for an hour. And it just makes you a more sane and pleasant person, okay, than being on the computer all day. And then you can have a supply of flowers for your altar. It's very nice. It's very sweet, okay? Puchok, if you can't get fresh flowers, you can imagine offering them. And typically, it's a Buddhist tradition to imagine the whole sky covered with flowers, okay? So when you're offering flowers mentally, it's a tradition to fill the sky with rose blooms or fill the sky with daisies or like that and offer them in your mind, okay? If you're too lazy to grow your own. Okay. Pilchok Deyang Chupit Chin Sung Tunne. There's a special mantra called the mantra of Samantabhadra, who lived 2,500 years ago. And you can offer that, you can say that mantra while you offer the sky covered with flowers. Okay? There's a mantra to say for offering the sky full of flowers in your imagination. So you can say the mantra while you make the offering. Okay? It's a very, very famous mantra. Okay? I'll teach you sometime. Chingilap, then the flowers will be blessed if you use the mantra. Okay? Chingpune, tar gewa ngosok jawa chidapo tsepel. Then at the end of the offering, you should be careful to bank the good karma. Okay? We talked about it the other day. If you make good karma by imagining the sky full of flowers and offering them to your personal teacher, okay? You make thousands of good seeds of karma. They can be destroyed by what? Anger, okay? A few moments of really healthy anger or upset at somebody, like a journalist or something. They can destroy all the good seeds you've made in the whole day, okay? A few moments of careless anger or what do you call it? Like feeling really upset at somebody. They can destroy all the good deeds you've done the whole day. And that's why in those times people start feeling sad or down because they've wiped out all their good seeds, okay? Sokchawa. So it's important to bank them. Bank them means sing the mantra, offer the flowers in the sky, imagine the good karma you've got, and give away the good karma fast to somebody else, okay? And that protects the karma. You still get it, but it's in somebody else, okay? I used to give away all the money from my job, okay? Every 6 months, I would go to the CFO, and I'd say, okay, it's time to cut the check. Then he would figure out how much money was due to me. I gave away half directly to saving the books. So the money went directly to that. And he would cut a check every 6 months. And then I would go in and beg the owner if he would increase the check a little bit. And he used to. He's Israeli. He's Jewish, right? One day I said, why do you always give me extra? He said, I'm just covering my bases. You know, in case Buddhism is correct. we would go in and they would cut the check. And then one day the CFO came to me and he said, Mr. Roach, can I talk to you privately, you know? And I thought, oh, you know, what's wrong, you know? And he came into my office and he sat down and he said, you got to think about your retirement, you know? You can't just give away all the money. You know, you should be investing some of the money. Don't just give away everything. I mean, give away what you want, but save some for your retirement. You have to invest it. And I suddenly this thing popped in my head, and I said, I am investing it, you know, in the safest place, you know, which is other people's hearts, you know. I'm giving it to other people, and I'm putting that karma in a safe place. It's not like your 401ks that suddenly get wiped out when the stock market changes, you know. My retirement fund, I don't have any of that money now. It's all gone. When I went into three-year retreat, I gave away all of it. But I know where it is. And I get dividends every once in a while. Okay? Okay. Anyway, when you give the flowers, then imagine that you are giving away even the good deed of giving the flowers. You give away the flowers, and you give away the karma also. And then it's a complete gift, okay? And then it's protected in a way. So this was the practice followed by a lama named Chi Dapo Tsepel. Chi normally means that that lama was an abbot, a high abbot. It means throne holder. Chi means throne holder. Chi Jang Rinpoche, who's in one of the pictures there, my teacher's teacher. Chi Jang means the holder of the throne. So Chi Tsepel, Dapo Tsepel, he used to follow that custom. Daki Lama Rinpoche Sung said my lama. Okay, my lama described how one of his lamas followed this practice. I don't have dates for Dapo Tsepel. I don't think anyone has found them yet. Okay, Chesung. But I assume late 1800s or early 1900s. Okay. Dena Rangi Depe Lak Topa Yin Ki Chepe Zeki Lak Topa Me. We were talking, I think Phil might remember, the other day we were talking about Lakma Topa. And we said, don't read it as, right? So Lak Topa means to be short on offerings. Lakma Topa means you're not short on offerings, okay? I said it wrong the other day. I said Lakma as a single word. It's not that. Lak Topa means to be short on stuff to offer. Lakma Topa means you're not short on stuff to offer. Okay, here he says, you're never, if you have a problem making offerings, it's because you're Depe Lak Topa. What's Depa?
Faith.
Faith, okay? If you think you don't have something to offer, you don't have enough faith, okay? Just have belief. Meaning, just close your eyes and imagine the sky covered with flowers. And offered. It's very, very pleasant practice, okay? Try it. You know? Everybody's trying to do chakras and tantric deities and try a few skies full of rose petals once in a while. It makes you a very nice person, which is probably a good thing. Chepe Zeki Lak Topa Me. So you're never short of stuff to offer if you have faith, okay? Deta chena gashi ki chupani chuda meto so puva chogo nyamne. Ma tik tik nam socho chepa kantup chepe chog mu nyamna. Then he says, I say stuff like that, and the lazy ones among you, you grab that and you use it as an excuse to be lazy. I say, if you have enough faith, you can close your eyes and offer a flower. And then you lazy boneses refuse to go make a rose garden outside of your house because you think you can just close your eyes and offer the flowers. So now he's criticizing people who are lazy and close their eyes and offer the sky full of roses. Okay? Some of you are thinking to yourself, oh, in that case, I can just offer a glass of water or I can go out and find some old flower and that will be enough. And I'll just sort of slowly collect my karma drop by drop, okay? What's an English word for that? I'll collect my karma in small increments, and that's enough, okay? You guys think that. Kantup chepa chok mun nyamna. If you're thinking like that, deni chima yida so su kewa rang la yuna, that reluctance to go to the store and buy the best water and offer it, that reluctance, after you die, that karma might cause you to be born as what they call a hungry spirit. Okay, there's a when you have a haunted house, when somebody dies in a house, and then people say, I heard a ghost or I heard a spirit, you know, wailing or crying. In Tibet, they say that's for real. They say the person was so attached to the house that when they died, they were very upset. And they went into the spirit realm, Bardo, and then they got stuck in the house because of their attachment to the house. And they're suffering because those kinds of beings can't get enough to eat. They're always suffering from hunger and thirst. So that's why they're crying or wailing or banging chains and stuff like that, okay? So if you want to be one of those Casper the Ghosts, be cheap on your offerings. Okay? To the altar. To the altar. Okay? Rangla yuna kang san sangne pu. Whatever your capacity is, you should give the best you can. Okay? And he's very careful to say, according to your capacity. Okay? It's important when you make an offering not to give more than you can. Okay? It also applies to donations. Don't try to give more than you have. Don't run up your credit cards you know what I mean? Don't use your family's money without asking them. Okay? Money that you use for offering should be clean and free. It should be after you've done your hard work and you got your pay and you paid all your responsibilities, you fed your children, you paid your mortgage, then whatever money you have free left over, which is honestly earned, then from that you should buy the best thing you can. Okay? And if it's only $5, that's okay. But it should be honest and clean money. Okay? Then he's criticizing some of the monks in his audience, okay? His audience was 99.9% monks, okay? Most of the time. He was unusual, as I said, because he agreed to teach lay people. He had huge followings of lay people. There's a beautiful story. I think it was during this set of teachings that government officials started to come to his teachings, which was very controversial, and he was attacked bitterly during his lifetime for teaching lay people. And so hundreds and hundreds of lay people would come, and government people started to come, like high ministers of the Tibetan government started to come, and the minister of war came, wearing his sword, you know. And one day the minister of war came up and offered his sword on the altar and begged him to become his disciple. And he followed him around for the rest of his life, you see. So he was a very unusual lama. He was attacked very viciously later in his life. And if you see photos of him, the early photos are very handsome and thin. And then later, he's grossly obese. He's very, very obese. And the story is that he was attacked by black magicians, okay? He was criticized, and then people attacked him, and some magicians attacked him. And he fought psychically, and then his body was ruined, okay? So you'll see those later photos of him, very obese, right? Anyway... he's criticizing the monks in the audience. He says, some of you have heard that the highest form of offering is your own practice, okay? And that applies to any lama, including me, okay? People say, would you like some money? Money's helpful. Would you like some Cheerios? Cheerios is also helpful. Then people say, well, what would you like the most? And then we say drupe chupa. Say drupe chupa. Drupe chupa. Drupe chupa means the offering of your spiritual practice is the highest offering you can give to a teacher. Okay? They don't really need your money. They don't need your Cheerios, you know. What pleases them, which the Sanskrit word please is what? Puja. Okay, pujyate, puja. Like, you know, guru puja, or, you know, what pleases a guru, guru puja, is your practice, okay? If they see you being nice to someone that they know you're jealous of, they feel happy, okay? And if you run to them and say, this other student hurt me today, and I don't like them, then that's the opposite of an offering. That upsets them. It actually shortens their life. Okay? And that sort of disharmony between students really shortens a lama's life. Okay? So if you want to make an offering to a lama, the best thing is to be nice to other people. Okay? Especially normal people who don't know you're a Buddhist. Okay? Then when the Lama sees that, they feel happy. And they say, oh, that's the best flower that you could offer. Okay? Now, Pabong Rinpoche is criticizing monks because some monks will come up and say, okay, Rinpoche, I'm not getting you any flowers or water. I'm just doing my mandala offering at home, you know? Be happy. And he's like, wait. Maybe you could do both. You know? Like, make some beautiful offerings. And every time you're nice to somebody, in your mind, send that to your teacher. Offer that to your teacher. Okay? You know, Jatang means hermits. It means guys who are living in caves and don't have much money. Okay? Dakyang, say Draba. Dakyang. Draba. Dakyang. Draba Dakyang. Draba Dakyang. It means, it's a beautiful, beautiful word. In Buddhism, it means, the Dalai Lama is always saying, I'm just a simple monk, right? He keeps saying that. I'm just a simple monk. He's translating in his head, Draba Dakyang. That's the word Draba Dakyang. Draba Dakyang means a solo monk loner or something like that. You know, someone who doesn't have any commitments, they don't have a house, they don't have family, they don't have a wife, they're just alone. They're just on their own, Draba Dakyang, and free. Free as a bird. Like that. That's called Draba Dakyang. Okay? Soki Dharla Sangsegi Chepa Bugyu Me. Those monks like that say, look, I don't have anything to offer. I'm just a Draba Dakyang. I'm sorry. You know? I've designed my life so that I'm, what do you call? Automatic vows of poverty. Okay? And I don't have anything to offer. Okay? Draba Dakyang. Me Rung. Rapta Chungala Dube Chepa Tsora Sumba De Kona Na Puwe. And then they tell me, oh, they're just offering their practice. Chok me nyamdu. That's correct. It's enough. The highest offering you can make is your practice. He says, I admit that. But nyamdu sangzingi chibatama yang ma puwar dena. But if you don't make some attempt to offer something real, some physical offering, one flower, one piece of fruit, half a glass of water, if you don't make some attempt to match the mental offering with the physical offering. Denat serab ne serab to bugyu mepa. Degarang le miyong. Degarang, say degarang le. Degarang le. Miyong. You will be stuck in the same financial circumstances for many lifetimes. Okay? Meaning you won't have anything for many lifetimes. I love this part. I really love this part. Okay? Why? I think it really applies to all of us, okay? And I think it applies to our group in recent years. We got a little too, theoretical. And everybody was really good at explaining emptiness, but nobody was going to help poor people or anything like that. And I think it's a balance. I think you really need both. I think it's a mistake only to help poor people and not meditate, and not study. And I think it's the same mistake to just study and meditate and not help people hands-on. Luckily, tomorrow, you'll have a chance to help hands-on during your day off at the soup kitchen for the homeless, people who are experiencing homelessness. So Rebecca, you want to raise your hand? She's organizing that. Rebecca's organizing that. Stand up, okay? Don't be a loser, okay? Don't take the day off. I'm tired, Geshe-la. I don't want to go work in a soup kitchen. Go work in a soup kitchen. You will feel more refreshed. You will feel very like you had a good sleep. You know, it's better than watching TV or videos or just lazing around on a couch. Go stand in the soup kitchen. What, it's 3 hours or 4 hours, something like that. And you'll feel great afterwards. You'll feel very, very invigorated. Okay? Okay? Try it. You'll find that it's better than taking naps or stuff like that. Degarang le mi yongxing. Xiao ne zumo tsam dang. Pe kang che re tsam ne ma chung nang. Nang chung mi che pa pu. Xiao se means a piece of food. Zumo means this much. Okay? This is a zumo. Zumo means a thumb. So it means that much food. from your, you know, if you eat a croissant in the morning, take a little piece off that big and put it on the altar, okay? In a nice plate, okay? Don't throw stuff on the altar. It should be, the presentation is important, okay? Do you take the best part of, do you take the part of the croissant that you really like or the part that you don't like? You know, do you take the part with the filling in it or do you just give them the corner because they're not going to eat it anyway? You know what I mean? No, I mean, don't think like that, okay? Don't think like that. Don't think they're not going to eat it, okay? That's a big boo-boo, okay? Take the part out that you like the most and you eat the ends and then put it on the altar. It's very, very sweet. Get in the habit, okay? Get in the habit. The first few times you're like, I don't know why I'm doing this, you know? Nobody's going to eat the chocolate inside. And then after a few times, you get good at it. And then you feel happy. You feel like, I gave what I enjoyed the most. And that's the way it should be, okay? Then you'll get in the habit of offering that to other people also. And you'll become a nice person, okay? It's a nice habit, okay? All right. Even if all you have is half a stick of incense, Nangchun mi chepar means, even if you're broke and all you have to offer is half a stick of incense or a corner of your morning croissant, Nangchun mepa means don't be shy about it, okay? Like, do it with chutzpah, or what do they call that? Pizzazz. What do they call that? Panache. That's it, yeah. Do it with panache, you know, like, you know, as if you're a millionaire, okay? It's that story in the Bible where the lady offers the penny, right? And that's all she has. And she makes the best offering. So just, you know, the corner of my bagel is the best corner of bagel offered by anybody. Huh. You know, okay, like that. Don't be like, oh, all I have is... Okay. Machepa puna... Now, a very important story is coming now, okay? A very, very important story. And I want you to, I'm not going to explain it till the end, why it's important. And I want you to think why it's important, okay? You ready? If you keep offering little things, you will have more and more to offer, okay? Geshe Puchungwa. So there was a lama named Geshe Puchungwa. He was a Kadampa lama. Kadampa are the... There's a group in England now called the New Kadampa. They're just one Buddhist group, modern Buddhist group. But they took the name of the first... some of the first Buddhists in Tibet were called Kadampas. And it's a nice name to take. If they hadn't taken it, I might have taken it. It's a nice name. They were the hardcore first Buddhists in Tibet. And you know, they were, what do you call it? Like the first Christians, they were, people didn't like them. And people criticized them, and they were weird, and people felt like, what are they doing, you know? So anyway, they were kind of courageous people. Anyway, he was a Kadampa. It wasn't that he had a Geshe degree. That came 500 years later, okay? It just meant he was a teacher, okay? Geshe Puchungwa, who lived 1031 to 1109, if you care. Namtar. This is a beautiful word in Tibet. Namtar means total freedom, moksha. It's the vimukti. It's the Tibetan translation of vimukti or jiva mukti, like that. And it means spiritual freedom, spiritual liberation. Mm. In Tibet, the name for the biography of a lama is Namtar. I like it. They don't say his biography. They say the story of his liberation. Okay? I like it. So anyway, the Namtar of Geshe Puchungwa describes this kind of what do you call that? Phenomenon, where you start to have more and more things to offer if you keep it up. If you keep offering half a stick of incense, stuff will happen. And here comes the story. Geshe Puchin wa shene, nye dambo pangbu natsa ting ewa pu. Here comes that sneeze. No. Yes. No. It's the incense part. Okay. I don't know where it is. Nye dambo pangbu. When I was first starting out, I was broke. When I first became a Buddhist, I was broke. And I wanted to offer incense, but I didn't have any money. So I found wild grasses that smell good when you burn them. And I would go wander around and look for these dried grasses, and I would bring them home, and I would burn them on the altar. Natsa means all kinds of wild grasses. Then, tingewa. And when I burned them, it was a very beautiful... You know when you burn dry grass, there gets that glow, that beautiful glow? Dene Rinpo Shijor, it's misspelled in the text if you care, okay? It says Rinpo, it should be Rinpo, and it would take you a zillion years to figure that out. Rinpo Shijor is a kind of incense in Tibet that has four ingredients, okay? For example, it might have latse. Latse means musk from a deer, all right? From the... It grows inside a deer musk, okay? Anyway, they mix it in. So that's considered medium quality incense, okay? It's called Rinpo Shijor. Nar songewa ulgyudang. So first all I could offer was dried grass from the meadows. And then later I got more money and I started to offer musk incense, okay? Tanda akaru dang duruka la sopa sung chinge bulsung. Then now he's able, because he made those medium offerings, he's now able to buy akaru, which is Sanskrit for agaru, which is a very fragrant and precious substance. Okay, it's a tree. It's like sandalwood. Okay. And duruka. Duruka is a kind of sap from a kind of fir that smells very good when you burn it. Okay? And it's rare and it's very expensive. So I started with grass, I worked up to incense sticks, and now I'm offering these like frankincense and myrrh, okay? Like expensive stuff. Sung chingewa, very delectable. Bul sung. Konki re chikla sersang nishu tsa niki pujone pulware. And then there came a day when he paid 22 gold coins for a little thing of incense. You're talking like $10,000 or something. Okay? He got up to paying $10,000 for this incredibly rare incense that, okay? Puwade. What's the lesson there for us, for normal people? We are normally stuck in downward cycles, okay? We, sansara, the word sansara, which is not samsara, okay? That's wrong, and nobody knows that, but that's okay. Sansara means the cycle of suffering, right? They say Buddhists have to escape from sansara. I'm going to describe to you a sansara, a downward cycle. Your boss at work comes to you and yells at you and calls you stupid, which even my boss did sometimes. And they call you stupid, right? And then human nature is to call them stupid back. And that's the same with New York Times stuff and all this Elephant Journal stuff. It's the same. Human nature, your nature and my nature is to want to, you criticize me, I'll say something worse about you. I know something worse about you. I can outdo you, you know. You criticize me, I can, I have stuff to say about you. It's human nature to someone criticizes you, then you're dying to say something worse about them, you see? That has nothing to do with what you're doing wrong, right? It doesn't make it better that they're also doing something worse, you know what I mean? Rather than saying, thank you, I'll try to clean that up, you know, your reaction is, no, you're doing something worse, I know, and I'll write something about it. You see what I mean? And this is, then you get into a downward cycle, you see? You criticize me, so I'm going to criticize you and make the karma that then next week you will criticize me more, or more people will criticize me. You see what I mean? And that's called a downward cycle, and that's a samsara. Unfortunately, there's no word in Buddhism for the opposite. And I think there should be. Maybe you can invent one. Okay? What's an upward cycle? I don't have any money at all. I'm totally broke. I have an altar which is like a cardboard box, you know? And all I can do is offer some tap water in a old Coca-Cola bottle, okay? And then I want to offer incense. Well, go out and find a plant that smells good. Sage is free in Arizona, if you know where to look. Diamond Mountain has a big pasture of sage in it. It's nice. Go out and pick some sage and burn it. Or some juniper. Smells really good. Or pine resin. You can find it. It's free. You know? So go find some and offer that. The karma of offering the weed that smells good is that you will get some more money. Some money will come to you. And then you can offer some. You can go to the store and buy some Indian incense, right? And it will smell nice and you can offer it, right? And then by offering that, you make enough money, you can buy the really high quality, you know, musk incense. And then later you can buy, frankincense is fun to offer, myrrh is fun to offer, you know. These very expensive agaru, you can find agaru. You can still find agaru. It's in Indian grocery stores and it's expensive, okay? And what I'm describing and what I want you to get the feeling of is that you can create an upward cycle, you see? Make an offering with a piece of grass, but make it sincerely. And then more money will come to you, you see? Money will start to flow in. And then you can buy medium quality incense, and then more money will flow in. Then maybe you can get up to where you pay $10,000 for one day's incense, you see? And that monk did. Geshe Puchunwa did 1,000 years ago. Okay? He started an upward cycle, you know? Oh, everyone's criticizing me nowadays. Okay, so just shut up and say something nice about somebody else. And then two people will say something nice about you. And then say something nice about four people. And then eight people will say nice things about you. And then sooner or later you're in the, I don't know, CNN, and they're only saying nice things. Okay? Like, create upward cycles from scratch and build on them. You say, it's a very beautiful concept. Here it's with incense, but you can do it with everything. Okay? All right, here we go. I'm going to go just a bit more and then we'll take a break, okay? So have hope. Gashiki ko topadan dembe gomdun le. Chi jawa detuba la chanchu mi re she mawani. Okay, so there, those of you who know, I don't know, there are four classes of tantra. Okay, there are four classes of the secret teachings. The people doing three-year retreat at Diamond Mountain right now had the most thorough tantric training of any person on this planet, including the Tibetan monks, because they don't get that kind of training. They had 7 years of intense scriptural training, 10,000 pages of scripture they were trained in that have never been translated, and no Tibetan monk gets that whole training. Even in the two tantric colleges of the Dalai Lama's tradition, they don't get that training. So our people got it, right? And they studied the four classes of tantra. So there are four ancient classes of the secret teachings. And in the distinction between them is that in the lower tantras, you are making offerings with things. You are doing outer rituals. You are ringing bells. You are banging drums. You are chanting mantras, you know. You are painting mandalas, sand mandalas, like that. As you go higher in the tantric teachings, it becomes internal. And a high tantric practitioner might work in a grocery store. And they might stack deodorants all day. That's very typical of a high tantric practitioner. And they are imagining they are stacking planets or something like that, okay? And it's all internal, you know? If you looked at them, you would never know what they were doing, okay? So, some of the monks in the audience said to Pabongka Rinpoche, I've studied these big high teachings, and I've learned that it's a higher thing to do inner offerings than to do those gross physical outer offerings. I'm offering secretly inside. I'm not doing those lower tantra rituals where you pile stuff on the altar. I'm more advanced than that. Okay? Shimari, Chugyu Shinto Chungwa Te, they don't know jack about Dharma. Okay? They don't know jack about Dharma. Okay, got it? All right, don't quote me. Gyushin to Chuente. Satobi Chanju Samba Namki, Lu Boom Trak Duma, Lakpa Gyatong La Sopa Chune, Gyawanam La Chupa Kalpar Zepe Tsula Samne. Please remember that high bodhisattvas who live in this universe, who have the ability to emanate avatars, right? They're able to send out thousands of copies of their body, right? Those bodhisattvas who are very, very high bodhisattvas, they do that stuff. They split off. They get up in the morning, they brush their teeth, and then for fun, they split off 10,000 bodies. Okay? Then what? What do they do with those bodies? They emanate a few thousand more arms. Okay? You see those pictures of Chenrei Sig, right? Avalokiteshvara. Kuan Yin, right? And then they have 1,000 arms, right? Why, he says, why do you think those high bodhisattvas emanate those tantric deity bodies and they add extra arms, like 998 extra arms on them? Why do you think? They want to make more offerings. Okay? They need more hands because they got to offer more flowers. Okay? So don't tell me you're some big tantrika and you don't have to offer anything. You know? That you're beyond all that. He says, that means you don't know nothing. He says it in Tibetan. He says, by the way, if you care, if you want to learn that, Chö, Gyö, Shinto. Shinto means what? A lot. Chung. You know, yeah, minuscule. Your understanding of the Dharma is, how shall I say, minuscule. Okay? All right? Okay? Got it? Okay. Why do you think those guys emanate all those hands? How long do they make the offerings with those 10,000 hands? Kalpa. So you've heard the word kalpa, right? They translate it as eon. I tried to calculate what it was once, because the fourth chapter of the Abhidharma Kosha gives the data. I mean, if you worked on it, you could figure it out. I think Bhutan Rinpoche tried one time. Like, he spent a month on it. I spent a couple weeks on it. I forget what it came out to. I think it's 10 to the 60th power. It's zillions of years, okay? How long do they make the offerings with the 10,000 hands? Kalpa. They take a kalpa. They take 10 with 60 zeros on it, years. In a small kalpa, okay? All right, anyway, you don't care. Sorry, Ranglu Chikne Mepadi Kane Hurtak Chegu. You only got two hands. What should you do? He asked those monks a question, you know. Look, you're stuck with two arms. What do you think you ought to do if those high bodhisattvas do that? What should you do? Duh. Okay, got it? All right, Chinga. Chippabulukni. So we're going to take a break there now, because why? He's going to describe how you're supposed to pour the water offerings. And that we're going to do a demonstration for you. We prepared it for like a week. Scott was fooling around with a camera for like a week, and it broke 20 minutes ago. It's just your good luck. So I'll do it up here, and I'll probably have my butt to you, and that, sorry for that. And we'll do it together. I'll show you how to properly pour the water. Okay, there's a system. Okay, so we'll take a break. Don't forget to talk to Rebecca about tomorrow, and Nick has an announcement about tomorrow also.
Hey.
Okay, we'll start again. You okay?
Yeah.
You think that's gonna? You think you can project it? No. Take your time. Take your time. Let me move this. Does it work?
No, it's only
on okay. 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 We'll start again. I'm going to need a pitcher, an empty pitcher for the water. Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you. Okay. All right, here we go. Chippa Bulugni, if you want to know how to offer this water offering, right? By the way, I think he's going to say it sooner or later, but there's a tradition in Tibet that says maybe it's better to offer water because you won't get proud about it and you won't get cheap about it. You see what I mean? It's free. You won't worry about how much you're spending on your offerings. And also, you're not going to think, my water's better than everybody else's water, like that. So there's no competition. And there's no expense. So there's no danger of competitiveness, and there's no danger of cheapness, right? Stinginess. Okay, here we go. Chipa Bulugni, if you want to know how to make the water offerings, Yunchab Tabatuna, if you're working on the water bowls, Dingnam Lepa Chi, you should wipe the water bowls well, okay? And you take a cloth. You know, like this. I don't know. Let me see. I'll get one bowl, okay? And you, before you make the water offering, you know, the cloth covers both hands, and you chi means you wipe it out well. If you live where I live, the water dries up. The water where I live is half arsenic, and in the desert, and it makes water stains on the bowls, so you have to get them off. It's important that the water bowls be perfectly clean, okay? Lepa chi. Then you set them down, and kupatze means you have to be careful how they're arranged, okay? And you get good at it. You get very automatic at it. But they shouldn't be too far apart, and they shouldn't be too close together. They say that they should be the distance of a grain of rice apart. Okay, that's the correct distance. It's probably what? In centimeter, it's a millimeter, 2 millimeters, something like that. Okay? What do you call it? Like a quarter inch or something. Between an eighth and a quarter inch. All right? Something like that. Tak ringna. They say if the water... Okay. If the water bowls... If you're sloppy, And you don't set them down in a nice straight, if you set them down too far apart like that, okay? Then Thak Rinna, Lama Dangjal. You might be separated from your teacher. Okay. This gets very paranoid, okay? It's not fun after a while. You're like, oh my God, I'm not going to see my teacher today. I put the water bowls too far apart. It's all just a trick to get you to think about how important it is to be near your lama. Okay? So it's not that, you know, you're going to go to hell, water bowl hell, and, you know, you'll never see anybody there because it was a quarter inch apart. You know, don't think like that. I don't know, American Buddhists can be very fundamentalist. You know, some of them can be very, they're not fun to be around. They're very, like, nervous and they're, like, staring at your water bowls. And, you know, but they read that they're not supposed to be judgmental, but they're looking at you like, you know. There's no Tibetan monk who thinks like that. It's all the American Buddhists. You see what I mean? First generation fundamentalists, you know. And then later generations, they calm down a little bit, and they have fun, and they make it nice, okay? So anyway, by tradition, you're supposed to think, be aware of your lama and how much you'd like to be with your lama, and then make sure the bowl is hugging the other bowl the way you would want your lama to hug. You see what I mean? And just think pleasant, nice thoughts as you put out. Don't think like, I'm in a rush, I got 14 minutes to do this, I have a meeting at work. You know, don't waste the time that you're putting out the offerings. We talked about the other day, somebody asked a question about how long should they practice. Put time on either end of your practice, okay? Get up 15, 20 minutes before you're going to start your meditation. Have time to make yourself a little tea. I go out and feed my birds. You know, I hang out with them for a while. I go look at the roses, see how they're doing. Then I mosey on in and start my meditation. It's not like I jump up and I run to the meditation cushion and I got 14 minutes, you know what I mean? So that's how you should do everything, actually. You know, like, show up a little early for meditation, enjoy everything, you know, put the bowls nice. If you don't have time to do the bowls, then forget the bowls, okay? Put a banana on the altar and sit down. Really, I'm not kidding. Don't get nervous. Don't pile up your practices so that they cause new anxiety in your life. I'm a bad Buddhist. You know, I didn't put my bowls out this morning. Maybe you didn't have time. That's okay, you know. If you have time, set the bowls out nice. You know, they told me when I became a monk, they said, you have to check your vows 6 times a day. I think it's 513 vows or something. If you count the bodhisattva vows and the tantric vows and the monk's vows and the other vows, you know, I'm supposed to check them 6 times a day. That's 3,060 checkings, you know. And I went on a one-month retreat, and I started like at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I started checking my vows. And you can't do it. It's not physically possible. You can't go through your vows 6 times a day, all the vows you have. If you try, you're just going to get nervous, and then you'll break more of them. Okay? So make your practice leisurely and fun and have a good time, okay? And leave yourself time. So if you don't have time to do water bowls, don't do them. Just put a flower on the altar or something like that, okay? Go to the altar 10 minutes before you're supposed to start meditating and enjoy yourself and think a little bit and relax and talk to your altar, right? And then leave yourself like 15, 20 minutes on the other side of the meditation to come out of it sweetly and hang out with Buddha or something, you know? And then go to work. You see, I mean, don't smush it up to 1 minute before you have to get in the car, okay? Leave some time on either side. If you can't do all the fancy practices, then cut them, okay? Cut them, all right? Don't be one of those people who adds, I met so many frustrated Western Buddhists who are, they took 14 secret initiations, they're supposed to do 48 mantras every morning, and they come and confess to me, mantra number 27, I forgot, you know, and I'm going to go to hell, you know. And I'm like, just calm down, you know. Say your teacher's name 3 times every morning. That's enough, you know. And like that, don't get all nervous. Don't let it all become another guilty thing, okay? Leave 15 minutes before, leave 15 minutes after. And do it sweetly. And take your time. And do it nicely. And do less things. Do less practices. They'll come out better, okay? Anyway, if you have time, you know, make sure they're all equidistant and think about, I don't want to be separated from my teacher, okay? If they are too close, you will lose your intellect. You'll become more dumb. I don't know why, okay? But it says that. You won't be as... You know, like, somebody will get up and explain the 3 flavors of emptiness to you, and you won't understand it, okay? So I guess you're supposed to think about that. I hope my mind is clear enough that I can have all those high thoughts. I hope I can understand the teachings. Like, think about that when you're putting out the water bowls. Got it? Okay. And don't go crazy, you know. Don't like do this American fundamentalist Buddhist thing where, you know, oh, you know, you're a bad person. Your water bowls are too close. You know, just let it go. That's all so weird. No Tibetan monk does that. Okay? Normally these are made of bell metal or brass or copper or silver, okay? And if you bang them, listen, okay? You will go cuckoo, okay? Nyowa means crazy. You'll have mental problems. So I don't know exactly what that's all about, but... I think it relates to yelling in motels at 2 o'clock in the morning, in the corridor, because we travel all the time. We're in motels a lot, and sometimes we forget we're there at 2 o'clock. We just got to Moscow. We're walking down the corridor and we're yelling down the hallway, and that would be a karmic cause of craziness, because you're disturbing other people. All right, like that. It's similar. Okay. Nyoso Chungatar Minching Yokyok Chungwe Detar Minching Yokyok Meber. So be careful with the distance. Don't be careless and bang them into each other. And then he says Yokyok Meber. Yokyok Meber means make sure they're parallel to the edge of the table and they're not like this, you know. They should be all in a straight row, okay? And it's a practice in awareness, right? Like those Zen monks who rake the gravel and stuff. It's a practice like, okay, let's make it straight. We'll have the same distance between all of them, and nobody's closer, you know? And it's just it's an exercise in care, in having care, okay? All right. Yokyok mepar dikga. Okay, so I'm going to pour the water into the... Where's Susie? You want to help me? Come. Can you pour the water into here? Okay. You start over there, I'll start over here. Okay. It's all wet here. We haven't done a very... We're probably going to go to hell or something. Okay. Okay. So before you go to bed, it's tradition to empty your water bowls. Okay, you're not supposed to leave them overnight. Why? Because when you die one of those nights, you won't leave a job for somebody else to do. That's what you're supposed to think. You know, one night I will die. What does it pray the Lord my soul to keep if I die before I wake? Something like that, okay? It's all backwards. It's a practice of it's a practice of death meditation to empty your bowls every night so that if you die before you wake up, somebody else won't have to clean it up, okay? It's a Buddhist meditation. It's a death meditation. Empty your bowls every night. It's bad luck to leave them facing up empty. It means, you know, you have nothing to offer and you don't care that you have nothing to offer. So it's tradition, although he doesn't say it, so you're the altar, okay, I'm the person, all right? You would, you're the deities, I'm the water offerer. This is the room, you are pictures, okay? Then it's tradition to stack them like this. First one is down, and then you stack the rest like this before you go to bed. These are kind of hard, they're not normal shape, but you probably, if they fall down, you're gonna break your leg in a roller skating accident. I don't know, but anyway, you set them like that, and then they'll dry out overnight and they don't get water stains in them. So you put all of them like that, okay? When you wake up in the morning and you have already cleaned your room. And you've tidied up the altar, right? And then it's time to make the water bowl offerings. There's a tradition. You stack them, okay? Like that. I'm not going to do all of them because they'll fall down and I'll break my neck in a subway someday. So supposedly you have 8 water bowls, right? Which we'll talk about later. And there's a mudra, there's a hand gesture. Argam, padyam, pati, bube, dupe, alake, gende, nudi, shapta, ahum. Okay, there are gestures that you use, okay? But let's say I have 7 water bowls. You stack them, all 7, and you pour the water in the top one. And then you can hold them in your hand, although these are too many to hold in the hand, okay? And then you pour a little bit in this one, like that, you see? You pour most of it in the bowl underneath, and then you put this bowl here. And then you pour most of it in the next bowl, and you set out the next bowl. Okay? And that way you go. So they'll all have a little bit in them, right? Then you take the point is that you never put down a water bowl which is empty. See what I mean? And you pour it from bowl to bowl, and then in the end you have a little bit in each bowl. Then you add water, okay? Then you fill it up. And then you straighten them out, okay? So then look. Dignat sinanyambe. Tingnam sen nam sen chun sen luk ten. Dru sum ki jingilap. You can also do the 3 holy syllables, okay? You go like this. Omahum. You know? Omahum. Omahum. Like that. Omahum means, may I act like a Buddha, may I talk like a Buddha, may I think like a Buddha today. Okay? Like that. And you say those 3 syllables for each bowl, okay? Omahu. Chingilap. Chede omar omar goshin de tomba mimba rimshin tam. Pour from the top bowl to the next bowl until you have all 8 bowls out, okay? So let's just say they're all out. Rimshin tam. Dene bulwe se lakpa ya chiki bulwar chepa sok makupa. Michawar. So in Tibet, it's considered In Asia, it's considered disrespectful to offer a beverage to somebody with a single hand. You should offer, you know, would you like some tea? Or, you know, may I offer you some water? And you don't go like that. It's considered more, what do you call it? Polite, honorable to use both hands. You say, may I offer you some tea? Like that. Okay, so don't pour them with one hand, pour them with two hands. You know, and people have accused, you know, the Lamrim writers, they're too anal, they're just getting crazy, you know, this is too much. Who writes a book about how to pour water into a bowl? You know, Pabonka did, okay? And you can appreciate it, you see? You can make it a practice. It's like a tea ceremony in Japan. Like, you know, if you've ever learned that, or flower ceremony, it's a whole thing. It's a whole beautiful practice. It's a practice of awareness. It's a practice of elegance. And you should be elegant in your practice, okay? You know, you offer it elegantly, all right? I think a lot of us, Diamond Mountain lineage, we're a little bit unelegant. And I think to add elegance to our repertoire would be sweet. Okay. Name Shintam. Dene Buyu Se Lama Yasa Shila. So Jashuatar Jago. Pour it as if you are pouring Tibetan tea for the king of Tibet. Okay, so you wouldn't go to the king of Tibet, here, have some tea, man. You know, you would like, may I offer your honorable self some tea? The word for tea, when used for a king, is different from the word for tea when used for your friend. It's called sulja, which means, would you deign to drink this tea? The word is called tea which is deigned to be drunk. Would you take this tea which is deigned to be drunk? And they say, I would deign to do so. You know, there's a whole separate language in Tibet, okay? Okay, which is a big headache if you're trying to learn one language. You got to learn three languages because they're different language for writing. Letters. There's an epistolary Tibetan, which you never heard of. Okay, much less learned. Domine Shintam. Say, let me ask you, so what should I do? Deyang nen dhamma she. The texts say the way you pour it should resemble a barley grain, a grain of barley. The way you pour should resemble a barley grain. Those of you who did the 7-year intense tantric course at Diamond Mountain, you had another metaphor for a grain of barley. What was it? Yeah, when you do retreat, you should go in like this. Watch my hands, okay? You should go in like this, easy. Then build up, build up, build up, build up, build up, build up, intense halfway through. Then taper off again. Until the end, you're just doing, maybe you're practicing an hour a day or 2 hours a day, but in the middle, you're doing 14 hours a day or 16 hours a day of meditation. You see what I mean? And that resembles a grain of barley. So when you say you should do it like a grain of barley in Tibet, what you're saying is you should start small, increase, and then end. What's it mean about pouring? So when you pour the water in, and this is when you offer tea in Tibet also, which is the most important thing in Tibet, okay? It's the McBurger of Tibet. Is tea. Tea is a huge part of Tibetan culture, and you must pour it correctly. Okay, so you don't like slop it in like that, okay? You start with a thin stream, then you increase to a thicker stream, and then you go back to a thin stream. So you start with a thin stream, then you increase, and then cut it back. It's like, I guess that people do that with wine in restaurants, like a good waiter. They make a big deal out of it. I don't know what they're doing exactly, but you start with a little stream, then you increase, then you cut it. Okay? Like that. It's just all a practice in awareness. It's all a practice in awareness. David Life, the founder of Jiva Mukti Yoga, he came to my three-year retreat, and he taught us yoga in a yurt in the middle of the desert in 120 degrees, right? And he was sitting there one day. He could talk, we couldn't talk. So it was kind of probably fun for him after New York, because he got to yell at us and we couldn't say anything back. And he would say, he said one day, he said, if I could walk across the room with true grace, I would consider myself a yogi. You know, if I could stand up and walk across this yurt, which is 22 feet, I measured it in the 1,000 days I was in it, right? If I could walk across this yurt with perfect grace and elegance, I would be a yogi. I don't have to do all those asanas. See what I mean? Just to do one action with true elegance and grace. That's the point of this practice, okay? It's not that you get all nervous, you know, oh, I'm going to go to hell if I don't pour these things right, you know. It should be a practice of being elegant. And then it should carry over into your life, you see? You should be elegant towards the people you're around. Don't be abrupt. Don't talk too fast. Don't, like, yell at people. Be a little graceful. A Buddhist should be graceful. You see what I mean? Would you like some, may I get you a cup of coffee? Yes. Would you like honey or, what do they call that? Fake sugar? Saccharin or whatever. Stevia. Or would you like, I have also, what's that? Agave or what's that tree sap thing? Maple syrup? You know, what would you enjoy? You see what I mean? And say it sweetly and calmly. And then, you know, with a smile and with true affection. You know, a lot of respect is affection. They are very closely related, you know. You can be respectful and be mean, right? Affection is the highest form of respect, you know. Someone comes to your house and you say, may I offer you a coffee, you know. How do you take your coffee? Do you prefer instant or do you prefer ground? You know, and how strong do you like it? And do you want me to heat the cup or not? You see? And how much sugar will you take? And you make it a whole practice of serving them for 5 minutes, concentrating completely on their desires. And then that overflows into your life, and you become a more compassionate person because you practiced with tea. Or coffee. Okay, got it? It's a very elegant practice, all right? It should be, you know, like a ballerina, okay? All right, here we go. The beginning of the flow of the water and the end of the flow of the water should be chamo, more fine. Sanskrit, sukshma, right? And then the middle of the flow of the, what do you call it? The flow should be fatter. Okay. You got to practice, okay? You can, like, sit there all day and practice, okay? All right. Practice on your friends. Bomba chene bu. Chir luna sutum chelshing. If the water spills out, you will have trouble keeping your morality because you're sloppy, okay? Because you're sloppy. It means that the source of all happiness on this planet is being careful not to hurt other people. Okay? The source of all happiness on this planet is to be careful not to hurt other people. Don't hurt them physically. Don't steal their things. Don't mess around with their partners. Don't lie to them. Don't, how do you call it? Don't split up people with your speech. Don't talk harshly. Don't gossip. Don't be sad when people get things and happy when they don't get things. Like that, okay? That's a Buddhist Ten Commandments, right? Don't learn to restrain yourself and to act gracefully and kindly, and don't overstep the boundaries of what would hurt another person. You see what I mean? Even in a little tiny way. So when you pour your water bowls, You reflect on the state of your own morality, you see? I will restrain myself, control myself, what I say, what I do, what I think, and not a single drop will fall out. You see what I mean? And you make it a practice of watching yourself, okay? Then that should flow over to how you talk to other people. You see what I mean? I won't exaggerate anymore. I won't criticize. I will be gentle in my speech. Like that. As you pour the water, think about these things, okay? That's the idea. Chinlaya Tsutam Chelshing. Makengna loncha nyambe. But if you don't put in enough water, you'll be broke all the time. You won't have stuff. Okay? All right. Dui re tsetsam tomba chok. The length of a piece of rice should be, the water level should be the length of a piece of rice below the top of the bowl. Okay? It shouldn't, you know how you fill it up too far and then the water tension just keeps it in? Right? And it like that, it's gonna overflow. There, it overflowed, okay? Like don't pour in so much that the water's like that on the top, okay? That means you lost your concentration, you see? You were supposed to stop when the water level got to one rice length below the top of the bowl. But you were careless. And that means you'll be careless with other things, okay? And it also means you won't be able to meditate very well. If you can't concentrate for the 2 seconds that it takes to pour water into a bowl, what makes you think you're going to be able to concentrate for 10 or 15 minutes? You see what I mean? It's the same thing, okay? Makena lojin yamini. Okay. Let me think about it. We better keep going. I was going to take questions, but at least I want to finish the second homework, okay? We're supposed to finish the third homework. Tonight? Ew. Yeah. We better speed up, Geshe Michael. Susie, can you do the honors? And take them all over there? Okay. Then I'll just keep talking. My main ni nangsa yinbe shinto selshing. Sitting with tender to gyun kan ring nepa. Now we're on to another kind of offering you can make on your altar, which is a candle. Okay? Which is a candle. If you want to get fancy, which is enjoyable, learn to make a butter lamp. And there's a skill to it. I can teach you this week, okay? Jingmei, you have a butter lamp? You have butter lamp? So I need some real cotton and not synthetic cotton. And I need star flower stalks. Not too thick. Toothpick is too thick. And I need a nice ghee, okay? That's not overcooked and not undercooked. And I'll teach you how to make a butter lamp. They're very beautiful. They're very nice to make. You make the wick with your hands, and then you can offer a butter lamp, okay? And they smell nice. They smell like popcorn. Okay. When you offer a butter lamp, make sure it's burning brightly, okay? Make it in such a way, if you make the wick too thick, it will burn too fast. And it will get black and it will get sooty. If you make the wick too thin, it will sputter out. Make the wick a nice thickness, which I'll teach you, okay? I'll show you a wrong one and I'll show you some right ones. Make it so that it burns as long as possible because that's good luck for you living a long life. Okay? Okay. Say they were never not good soon. Metok so chepe shenya bu luk de ring de. Say ring de. Ring de. Ring de. Ningbo has to learn that word. Ring de means continue this pattern with the other things. Ring de means continue this pattern. In logic, it means I'm not going to give you the 42 permutations of this idea. Ring de. You know, just follow the same logic for the rest. Ring day means that. So he's talking about when you do the flowers and the other offerings, follow the same pattern. Chipa, re, re, pinyin, chu, chu, yupa. There are 10 benefits to each of the traditional offerings. So there are 8 traditional offerings. Well, that's why we offer 8 water bowls. Argam, Pating, Pube, Dupe, Aloke, Gende, Nude, Shapta. How many is that? Let's try again. You count, okay? Argam, Pating, Pube, Dube, Aloke, Gende, Nude, Shapta. 8? Yeah, that's why there's 8 water bowls, okay? Each of the 8 has 10 benefits, okay? Which are, he says, which you can find in the sutras. So Geshe Michael went and found it in the sutras, okay? I thought, heck, I'm only going to do this once. I might as well do it well, right? Even if we don't finish for 15 years. I'll give you the 10, okay? I found them. It took me a long time. All right? Again, for the Hamburg friends, it's only because it's in the computer. And we have 25 years of stuff in the computer. That sutra is finished. And I found it, okay? But we haven't finished all the sutras, and we still have to go. Okay, so here it is. I got the sutra. Metog. What's metog? Flower, okay? Here are the 10 benefits of offering flowers. Maybe we won't finish tonight, but I just like to talk about it, okay? By the way, mei means what? Fire. Tok means the top of a flagpole or the tip of any sharp, like the, mainly the top of something. So metog, the word for flower is flame at the top. It's a beautiful word. I like it. Metog means flame at the top. It's the word for a flower. Here we go. Chukang Shena, what are the 10 benefits of offering flowers? Jigden na meto tabur gyurwa. Number one, you will become like a flower in the world. Meaning people will enjoy your presence in the world. Okay? You will be someone who brightens the world. Okay? Number two, Dein nai wangbo namyang nyambar mingyurwa dang. Your faculty of smell will remain strong for the rest of your life, okay? I don't have a good faculty of smell because I commuted through Cancer Alley for 15 years to make money for the monastery, right? Northern New Jersey, where they refine all the gasoline in America. So I drove through that cloud every day for 15 years, okay? And it burned out my nose, okay? But I was happy. Rinpoche had an extremely sensitive nose, and if you had secretly eaten spaghetti with garlic in it in New York a week before, he would yell at you. I'm not kidding. Okay? It's supposed to be bad luck for monks to eat garlic. Supposedly it raises your sex drive. So, he would yell at you. He could smell it. It's very unusual. Okay? Anyway, if you offer flowers, which are fragrant, you will always have a strong sense of smell. Okay? Luki chinga namba tapa gyurwa. You won't need to wear a deodorant. Your body won't smell. Your body will never smell. Like, if your morality is good and... generally, if your morality is good, you don't sweat much. Unless you go to Mercedes's yoga class. And it doesn't smell even when you do sweat, okay? Tishimba juwe gyura. That's a very interesting thing. It's called the fragrance of morality. A truly moral person, their body smells fragrant, okay? When you get close to the Dalai Lama, I have, You can smell like a jasmine smell or something. And it's called the fragrance of a moral person, okay? My lama also, when you get close, you can smell like gardenia, like that, okay? It just comes out of their body. Chokdang choktsam sum namsu de tsu tim ki ti tinge dangwa gyewa. The fragrance of the morality spreads. People, you know, talk about them who live 1,000 miles away. It's not that they smell them, but they, it's metaphorical. The fragrance of the morality becomes famed. And people are saying, you know, that guy, you know, he ran after my car because he forgot to give me 5 cents from the change from the pizza. You know, like that. Like Abraham Lincoln, what, he walked, he borrowed a book and he forgot it and he walked 10 miles to take the book back, and like that, okay? Then remember, Jitengi ngun to Dorwar Gyurwa, you will become preeminent in this world, okay? You will become a cutting edge person in this world. How many we got? Six, I think. Here comes seven. Dukpe Chirnam Topa Gyurwa. Things come to you which are very beautiful, okay, in your life. You can start to notice that, okay, like well-made things, rare things, exquisite things, lovely things. They just start showing up, you know? Like, I went to... In Thailand, I used to work in Thailand and in Bangkok, and I went to buy a Buddha image. And I went into an old Buddha image shop, and there was a bronze, a European bronze antique of an angel, you know, slaying a dragon. And it was exquisite, you know. And I was with a diamond dealer friend. He's Indian, right? And I said, just out of curiosity, how much is this? And the guy said, $200. And I'm like, what? He's like, $200, you know. And then my Indian dealer, I'm like saying, I'll take, and then my Indian friend goes, burr. And then he says, 50, you know. and then we had this big fight, you know, for 2 hours. And then I got it for like $100. And I brought it home and I had it appraised and they said it was worth like $10,000, you know. And just things will come to you. Weird stuff. In the middle of Bangkok, in a Buddha image shop, there'll be an antique French Renaissance bronze that the guy wants for $60. You know what I mean? You can talk him down to $60. So things will come to you. Strange things will come to you. I gave it away to a lady who asked me to be her daughter's, what do you call it? Godparent? So the daughter got it. It was nice. I gave it to this 2-year-old. Now she's 20-something. Okay. Longchu Chewa Gyurwa. You will come to be financially, what do you call it? You always have enough money. Okay. Secure? I think we're on number 9. Tori Sukewa Gyurwa, if you pass away, you will take a good rebirth. Okay. And number 10, Nyurdu Yongsu Nyangane Dawa, you will achieve nirvana and Buddhahood quickly. Okay. Chipa Didar Nideshin Shepe Chuten La Metopoi Pumpenyun Yino, these are the benefits of offering a flower to an altar. Okay. These are the benefits to offering a flower upon an altar. They're not in the text. He just refers to them. And I went and found them for you, okay? I suggest we stop there. We can pick up on the next offering, which is incense, okay? And I'll tell you what the 10 benefits are there. I'm just being sneaky because they're mostly the same, and I don't want you to notice that. We have about, I don't know, let's do 1 or 2 questions. If anybody has any kind of question except scandal stuff, okay? If you have any reasonable, intelligent questions, Or you can just go home. Okay, go ahead. Speak loud. Or do you have a microphone? Here comes a microphone. Hang on.
How does a stupa and a bell and a dorje represent the mind of a Buddha?
That's a tough question. She said that stupa, that little offering shrine thing, and the bell and the dorje. I'm not much of an expert on stupas, okay? We don't learn that. Like, I have Nyingma friends, monks. They spend a lot of time on stupas. They have to build stupas. They have certain measurements. It's very strict. You know, I believe that in the old days, when a lama passed away, they might take the ring cells, the little bones, and put them inside of the stupa. There's an interesting stupa on the Tibetan-Chinese border of Pamtingba. What's Pamtingba? There were two, actually there were three or four brothers, two in Nepal, when the Vajrayogini practice came to Tibet through Naropa, right? And he taught it to these Pamtingba brothers. Two of them became high practitioners of Vajrayogini. One of them took a consort, a spiritual partner, who was Chinese, which was very unusual. And, you know, people say they got enlightened together. I don't know. But there's a stupa for them both. And it said that they left this world and they left some little pieces of their bodies. They practiced together as partners and they achieved enlightenment. And then they left little pieces of their bodies and people put them into a stupa. And that stupa still existed in early 1950s. I don't know if it's still there now. But the idea is that in some way their spirit is still there. Their mind is still there. Okay, so I think that would be a stupa. The bell and dorje, it's a nice question because they represent the two great qualities of an enlightened being's mind. So the bell has a certain meaning and the dorje has a certain meaning. First of all, the bell represents female's body, the sexual organ of a female. It's the lower part of the bell represents that. And it represents the female's energy, especially their sexual energy, represents wisdom, understanding, okay? Emptiness, which is another meaning why it's empty inside. The bell is empty inside. So the bell represents the feminine quality of all of us, which is your ability to understand that things are coming from you. And then the dorje, the little thunderbolt thing, that represents the male energy. It represents the male sexual organ. And it also represents compassion. So a man's energy is more proactive or more assertive. And that's considered desirable in terms of love. Love should be assertive. You should go to the soup kitchen tomorrow and assert yourself, right? Don't sit at home. And that's considered a masculine quality, to be pushy in your love. You know, like push love on people. It's a masculine quality. So those two instruments, especially when you hold them in your hand, and you always hold the bell in your left hand, because left is feminine, and you hold the dorje in your right hand because the right is male. And then you work them together like this, you see? And then, so they represent the two qualities of an enlightened person's mind, their love and their knowledge, together, like that. Male and female together, like that. It's a very deep subject. And there are vows in Tantra about those instruments and how you treat them and how you ring them and how you touch them. And it's very beautiful. It's a really beautiful practice, okay? Okay, that's a short answer. Let's do one more, okay? Yeah. Do you have a microphone? Alicia.
And what does a double Dorje represent?
Cross Dorje?
Yes.
It's called Dorje Gyadam. And we're going to do it tomorrow, Thursday. He's going to talk about it. He's going to talk about two symbols, the swastika and the Dorje Gyadam. So Dorje Gyadam is a crossed Dorje. It represents, it's the same as a swastika, okay? Swastika was used by the Nazis. Swa doesn't mean sva. It's not the sva that means myself. It's not that. It's S-U, it's Su. And when Su hits Asti, it becomes Swasti. The U changes to V, okay? So Su Asti changes to Swasti. And Ka means the thing that does it, who makes it. Su Asti Ka means Swastika. And it means that which brings goodness, okay? Asti means to exist, and is comes from that. Su Asti Ka means that which creates goodness. And it's an ancient... I freaked out when I first went to India. There's swastikas everywhere, you know. I'm like, wow. And we used to have swastikas in our temple in New Jersey, and then Jewish people got really upset. And we had to write out a thing and put it on the wall about swastika, you know. So swastika, especially written a certain way, represents long life and successful life, good life and a long life. And then the Dorje Gyadam, the cross Dorje, represents the same thing. It's the same meaning, which is stability. And oftentimes they'll put the Dorje Gyadam, the cross Dorje, on a lama's throne, where the lama sits. By tradition, you're supposed to put wherever the lama sits. Somebody's supposed to run ahead and put across the Dorje at the front of... It's supposed to hang down in front of the throne. And it means, may the Lama stay always. It means stay forever. And the swastika meant the same thing. Then why did they both come to exist? And there's a beautiful story about that, okay? It's a tradition to put a Dorje Gyadam. You should draw one under your meditation seat, so that you can never be disturbed. Okay? So there's a tradition to take rice or sand mandala, sand from a mandala, and you draw... I'll show you if you want. There's a way to draw the cross Dorje under your seat. And then you put your meditation seat on that, and then you put your, you know, cover it with a cloth, and then you're not supposed to move it, because it represents that you will not be disturbed. Then when you stand up out of your meditation, your feet are going to point to the double Dorje, which is disrespectful. So the Lama said, nobody can use a double Dorje under their seat anymore. You have to use a swastika. Because that doesn't belong to the highest deities, but the cross Dorje does. So we're allowed to draw a swastika under our meditation seat to represent a cross Dorje, which represents I will never be disturbed and I will not move from my seat. Got it? Is that a nice short answer? Okay. And then the swastika has to be drawn a certain way. It shouldn't be, it's called a left-hand swastika. The way I remember how to draw it, it was very complicated because I kept forgetting and doing it backwards. So finally I figured out this thing. If the arm of the swastika was shooting out air, it would spin to the left. Okay? Think about that. If the point of it was spitting out air and it would spin, it should spin counterclockwise. Sorry. Yeah. Then you have the right... Then you have the right arm, the correct arm. All right, I gotta go. I have to make a long journey tonight, so I'm gonna run. Okay, you ready, Miriam? You wanna do? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, tomorrow you have a day off. In Buddhist tradition, after you take a teaching, you should review it 3 times before the next teaching. That's a tradition. So the homework is like a trick to get you to do that at least once. But tonight, just look over your notes or think about what we said tonight. And then tomorrow, think about it again. And then just before the next teaching, try to think about it a 3rd time. And that's a tradition. So that you can pass it on to other people, okay? My dream is that in Hamburg, they are teaching this whole book for like 5 or 10 years, yeah, you know, to all the people there. And my dream is that you pass it on, okay? So it's not going to happen again. I don't have time to do it again. This is one time in my life that I can pass it on. So then it's your problem, okay? So you have to take good notes. And you have to pay attention, okay? And you should review it 3 times. At least think about it before you go to bed. What did he talk about today? And you'll remember 4 or 5 things, and that's okay. Okay? All right? Okay. Good night. All right. Okay. You're welcome.